Hello and welcome back to the EG studio and another MIPIM in London session. That was a phrase coined last night by Deputy Mayor Jules Pipe at the annual London reception, held not in Cannes for the first time, but at the Building Centre in London. That event, like these digital sessions, show what this industry can do in extraordinary times to keep calm and carry on. I'm Damien Wilde, and while we may be in London right now, this session, like most of our others, is not about the capital. Rather, we're looking at opportunities in the Oxford-Cambridge arc. In little more than an hour, the Chancellor of the Exchequer will seek to exude calm and a carry-on spirit when he delivers his first budget. Expect levelling up to be a well-used phrase in that speech. We should hope that the arc features too. But his priorities will necessarily have changed. There will be more focus on short-term measures to maintain economic activity than on longer-term investment, perhaps. But he will have to strike a balance. Will that balance have consequences for this region? And will the long-term vision survive? To discuss all of this, we're joined by Mike Derbyshire, Head of Planning at Bidwells, Alistair Lomax, CEO of the ARC Universities Group, Jackie Sadek, CEO of UK Regeneration, and Nigel Tipple, Chief Executive of the Oxfordshire LEP. And Nigel, I'll start with you, if I may. When we first scheduled this session, we expected it to be in Cannes, of course, and coronavirus, I don't want to dwell on that. We talked about that quite a lot yesterday, but it felt like a problem that was very, very far away. I just wonder, given that where we've moved to today, has the environment changed? We're expecting that commitment to infrastructure investment in the budget. We're expecting it to take in the arc, but we may have to wait for a couple of months for detail. Does that matter?
I think there's a balance there. There's clearly going to be a need to respond to more immediate priorities. But I think the commitment that government's shown over the last 12 months, actually, as we've been working with them on emerging governance and looking at the potential of the ARC as a collaboration. There are three LEPs, a business board there, 31 local authorities, all pointing in the same direction. So I think government recognises that we've made a commitment to work together. I'm sure that there'll be investment coming down the track in terms of pipeline, whether that's East-West Rail or other activity. And indeed, we're looking forward to a CSR timetable as well. So it's not just about today's budget, it's about how we move over the next 6-12 months and continue that momentum. There is momentum there. We need to continue to work together.
And there was a little bit of frustration towards the end of last year that perhaps some of the momentum that had begun a year earlier had stalled. But have you seen that momentum pick up this year?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from a local enterprise partnership perspective, that momentum didn't stop. What we took forward was local industrial strategy work. We came together with that and we began to develop a series of interventions around productivity. So looking at what are the common challenges that we all face. How do we work together in order to support a growing and a dynamic economy that's anchored in those communities that already exist? And you've got to look at infrastructure as part of that. You've got to look at the quality of place. And I think we managed to develop four work streams, one around placemaking in the round. Clearly connectivity, not just road and rail, but that's the broadband, the utilities, the whole package of investment that supports those communities. And we also looked at the environment and the potential to support that community of interest with interventions that add value to the environment and the quality of the environment around. So there's a balance in there as always, but I think, it's easy to be critical. I think we just took the view that we had to keep moving. We did that work. We agreed our local industrial strategies and we've moved forward now with joint investment plans that we will seek to work with government over the next 12 months on.
Okay, thank you. And Mark Carney stood up this morning. He didn't want to let his last week go by without doing something very prominent. But I think he was trying to strike that balance and trying to be reassuring in striking that balance in cutting interest rates. And he warned that there could be, coronavirus could have a large and sharp impact, but should be temporary. I'm just trying to get at the arc and what the next few months look like and whether that has any impact at all on the longer term vision.
It's interesting you mentioned the levelling up, because I see there's a number of timelines there. There's with the North, with HS2, that's a longer time horizon, and I think Boris described the arc as oven ready. That was his phrase. I think he's got a slow cooker. It's certainly slower than my cooker. But if you're looking at the time horizons for East and West, well, there's actually some immediate requirements now. And what we have, if you look around some of the key transport interchanges, you have a list of tenants and requirements that have requirements in the next year, next 2 years. what's not coming forward is the stock to supply that. And I think we all know that government wants infrastructure, and this to be driven by employment and jobs and not by housing. The housing numbers have almost grabbed the headlines. That's irrelevant. The housing numbers are a political product. What they want are the jobs. So I know from practicing now on the ground in Oxford, Milton Keynes, and in Cambridge, we've got requirements and tenants that would happily take substantial buildings, colleges that would happily have student accommodation, universities that are chomping at the bit in Milton Keynes. So there's a huge amount to happen now. We clearly, what we don't have is that vision in the arc of what's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years. And that is what is sorely missing at the moment, is how's it pieced together.
Okay, thank you. We'll come back to the vision shortly. But just one phrase you used there, housing numbers being a political product. What did you mean by that?
People don't live in a house for the purpose of living in a house. They move house to be close to where they live. Or where they work, I should say. So, the economy is driven by the jobs, and jobs in the right places. We need the houses desperately, but that's what's grabbing the headline statement. It's the housing numbers that are grabbing the headlines. It's the infrastructure and it's the jobs that is going to create the wealth and is what we need. And it's almost, I think the government ministers know it, but if you look at the way the arc is being portrayed and how it's grabbed by people on the ground, it's that million additional houses, isn't it? It's not about the GDV increase, and it's not about the fact that, and one of the real reasons we look at the arc as a generator, there's probably people in the arc now in those university labs trying to find a cure for this virus. That is the really interesting, challenging pieces, but we get fixated with the housing numbers.
Okay, thank you. And I'm not sure if listeners caught it, but I certainly caught a laugh from Jackie Sadek when Mike used the phrase oven ready there. I just wonder why. Was that scepticism?
I can only apologise, Damien. I'm so unprofessional. I had to snort with indignation audibly there. I do apologise.
I like a snort of indignation.
Well,
so please keep it up.
You know, anybody who knows anything about the Oxford-Cambridge arc will say that they're a great admirer of it, but actually there's really nothing there as yet in terms of actual plans, and we still don't know. We think the expressway has been binned off, but we still don't know that. And we only have, you know, the route. Well, we don't even have the route for the East-West Rail. We got a commitment to the East-West Rail. We haven't got much more than that. There isn't really a huge amount of flesh on the bones at all. And for the Prime Minister to describe this as oven ready is a bit of a stretch, shall we say. So, you know, forgive my little snort there. And, you know, we have got some immediate things that this government is going to have to address. Obviously, we've got a health crisis, which is enormous, which is going to blow them off course quite significantly. God knows how it's going to be. The coronavirus budget, I mean, it's hard. Obviously, we've got the knock-on effects of Brexit. I understand that the OBR have now downplayed our growth prospects to 1%. That's not great, really. And so it now is the moment, really, to start to populate the Oxford-Cambridge arc as a potential market maker. And I have to take my hat off to Bidwells. And I'm not just saying this because I'm sitting next to the senior partner, brackets planning. I'm not just saying that because Mike's sitting next to me. I'm saying because they held the most fantastic breakfast yesterday with a whole bunch of market-facing people, including L&G, Grosvenor, First Base. These are senior players in this space. And there are a lot of senior civil servants there as well. And I was greatly encouraged by what the senior civil servants were saying about the prospects of getting some flesh on the bones quite quickly now. But my warning would be this idea has been knocking around since 2014. And we have to now start to make it real. Otherwise, the market's going to get fed up and move along. You know, we can't carry on just having these, you know, and I did say in a rather grumpy and curmudgeonly way yesterday, you know, this could be the Thames Gateway all over again. I am a little bit fed up with the top-down construct that then isn't populated properly so that the market can come in and do what it wants to do. And my hat is off, really, to Bidwells for having seized that market-facing position, which I thought was absolutely admirable. Oxford and Cambridge will always be all right. You know, but we've got to get in and make these markets in places like Bedford and Milton Keynes. And these are where the opportunities are. And frankly, if we don't look after the Golden Corridor of London, Bedford, London, Oxford, Cambridge, you can kiss, you know, the levelling up to the Northern powerhouse goodbye. You know, you have to have this. And just one more thing. Sorry, I've started ranting. I do apologise. Just one more thing on what Mike was just saying about the million homes. You know, it's very, very easy for government, for politicians to wave their arms and come up with a big number and say, we're going to have a million homes along here. I think if the Oxford-Cambridge corridor only delivers a million homes, which will be not properly thought through and, you know, sticking houses in fields and all the rest of the stuff we know that already goes on, if the Oxford-Cambridge arc is not framed in the language and doesn't have the approach of a knowledge economy that fires the rest of the UK, then we will have lost the opportunity.
We'll come back to how it's framed, but just one last word or challenge on that oven ready comment. If it can be presented in an oven ready way, if it can be described in an oven ready way by government, that very much plays to the agenda, doesn't it? Because infrastructure is a long term play. If this government will need to be able to point to successes within 5 years, and so having something that they consider oven ready is a boost.
Well, I would be in full agreement with you, Damien, but you know, what happened to the million new homes that were supposed to be produced in the for the UK in 2020, which was announced by Brandon Lewis in 2015? I don't think we've delivered on that pledge, and I don't think anybody actually, you know, holds people to account in the way that I think you're being rather overly responsible, dare I say, in suggesting that at the end of a 5 year period of government we'll mark their homework. I'm not sure that's how it works, really, and I'm sad to say that. I'm old and cynical. I'm really, really sorry. But I do think the chances are we've got this government now for another 10 years. I do think that if they're going to get on and deliver on the infrastructure pledges, they will make a big commitment on money today. They won't have a plan. They will have to keep the plan up their sleeves for another two months or so, because they haven't got one. When they do start to move forward, they can't afford to bin off the likes of Oxford Cambridge, because that's about as far along as you can get with some concepts, let alone the other stuff they're thinking about. So let's hope you're right, that in 5 years' time that we can point to some demonstrable progress in this arena. Let's hope you're right.
Well, EG will mark their homework.
Good.
Others
good.
Should too.
Good.
And Alistair, sorry, we've been talking at length without bringing you in. I'd just like to get a few comments from you on that balance between short-term need to face the other way and long-term need to deliver.
Well, I think it's been 1,000 years coming, and actually it's a 50-year project from now, and it's a bit like
that is a longer term view than I expected.
Well, it's been 1,000 years because Oxford and Cambridge have been there for a very long time, and actually the thing that pre-exists any physical infrastructure or any homes is intellectual infrastructure, and they were great training institutions originally set up to serve the clergy. So and the universities are a great asset. 10 universities like beacons, you know, and they're the major employers, turning over collectively £5 billion of the £111 billion GVA going into the economy in the arc. £13 billion of that is attributable to the universities. So there's huge maturity. And actually, without Oxford and Cambridge, and it's quite right that the whole thing should be named after things which are associated with those great universities. I think the kind of oven-ready thing, well, you know, is it a nut roast or a chicken or a turkey? And I think what we don't know, and we hope that there will be some commitment in the budget. I mean, but if you've got something that's oven ready, you can always stuff the bird. You know, there is an option there just to reverse away from it. I think the Jackie's point, just thinking about the work that's been done by Bidwells and by others, that because there are a lot of people who've been running their own narrative and doing that in a very sophisticated way. I was just reflecting when we were allowed to gather physically, the number of people who came to the Crick, and I think it was at least 500 people there.
It was. This was the EG event back in November.
That's
supported by everyone around the table.
So just seeing the level of sophistication and commitment, and the LEPs were there as well. This is something which is, it's a system. And actually the major initiatives which are peppered along the way, it's an area where there's been very little investment. Actually, the volition has all come from the great institutions in Oxford and Cambridge have done enormously well with all their spin-outs and science parks and their expansion and their ability to raise capital. But they're great landowners along the way. And they've been thoroughly supportive of the weaker relations. But there's, in the middle, there's very, very little investment or thought. There are some great projects and programs and whole new industries. But it's a system for change, and it's a system for revolution and transformation. And those are the words which I think Bidwell's started using in your communications about a year ago. And they've gone into the manifesto. This is something that, now we have a government that says it's gung-ho about infrastructure investment, and here's a major opportunity. And it's a coherent area. I mean, I think the Northern Powerhouse, with all its different component parts, is we're often left out. And I think the sort of the argument that the Golden Triangle has had enough, and we shouldn't glaze that bird anymore before we put it in the oven, to follow the analogy. But but seriously, this is a major opportunity that could transform a lot of activity, and we certainly need it post Brexit. Coronavirus comes along, that'll pass. We'll learn from it. I think it's very interesting that we're doing a podcast and that people are still interested and still getting together.
Okay. All of the panel, please feel free to keep that analogy going. It might get harder and harder. But that segues neatly into perhaps some of the threats which have been touched upon. And with no investment so far, a government minister might think, why bother to invest? With a levelling up agenda, that there's certainly every indication that the ministers are looking further north. And the parallel with the Northern Powerhouse was interesting as well, that it did have that champion within government, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, which was tremendously helpful there. And I wonder, Mike, whether, given, as Jackie says, this has been some time coming, perhaps not 1,000 years, but certainly 6 years, should we assume that that support will come from central government?
I think they are relaxing the rules in terms of treasury investment, that you don't invest in terms of the return. But it's quite clear that as we move into the Brexit world, we're a first world country. We're a knowledge-based UK PLC. That is what is our differentiator. That is what is unique. We can do the life sciences in a way that the Americans can't because of the restrictions. We have some of the greatest scientists. So you need to develop on those particular expertise. And you've got two of the, I think the university rankings came out last week, didn't they? I think Oxford was number one, and I think Cambridge was number four or five, both ranking in the top 10 for all their subjects. You can't replicate that. It's taken 1,000 years to get that expertise. You can't replicate that. Why wouldn't you invest in that? Because the whole of the UK does understand that. But we fully understand that the man in Stoke might not get that, but you would hope our ministers, and you say ministers, I say which one, because their tenure seems to be pretty small at the moment, doesn't it? So which one? They're sophisticated enough to know. And I think Rob Jenrick went to Cambridge. I think was he in Oxford? He's one of the two, isn't he? I think he went to one of the universities. They get it. They must get it. Because if they don't, then it's a bit serious, isn't it? If they don't understand, you've got these. I'm trying to think of an analogy. You can desperately see me thinking, Damien, of an analogy. And it's escaping me that's related to Adam Reddy. But, I see the risk very low. I see the risk is very low.
Okay. Jackie, you've worked in Whitehall. Do you think... not from a, is it sensible to do so or not, but from a purely political point of view, it's easier to invest in the Midlands and further north than it is in the east of England.
Well, it's politically more acceptable at the moment, but actually, if you're going to follow the market, it would be easier to invest in the Golden Triangle. And they are going to have to pick winners. And I want to kind of change the tone of my contribution now to being a little bit more positive, because Nigel's absolutely right. It's very easy to be critical, and God knows I'm the first one out of the stocks at being critical. But actually, Alistair's right. You know, the power of the conference that the EG put on last year was extraordinary. I mean, you know, hanging from the rafters. And it was quite clear that the market is there, absolutely there, gagging to do this. The universities are there underpinning all of this, and the intellectual capital. Alistair's absolutely right about all of that stuff. And so, you know, sooner or later, the government's going to have to strike a balance between the levelling up agenda, which I get completely and actually support completely, and actually backing a winner and showing that we are really meaningful about growing our economy. And this is the best way that we could possibly demonstrate that, is by getting behind all of this. And at the Bidwell's roundtable yesterday, we rehearsed the idea of forming an investment bank or an investment fund, much as Howard Bernstein did with the Evergreen Fund and CBRE back in the day. I mean, actually, you know, was a way of Howard putting a load of gash land into a fund. But actually, you know, it sent the right signal to the market, and that would be an easy thing to do now. And I think there's some appetite for that. And I think senior civil servants hinted that that might be coming. They also hinted that we might be getting a senior political spokesperson for the ARC quite soon. Now, this time last year, it was mooted that we were going to get the Chancellor. Obviously, it was a different Chancellor, and that's all gone away. But I think we need a proper big hitter here. We had that very nice MP from Milton Keynes, and he was a very nice man and terribly well-meaning and very authoritative and knowledgeable. But he himself was the first to admit that he was disempowered. And we need somebody who can be a bit of a heavy hitter. Of course, I'm going to now say Lord Heseltine would be the ideal choice. But, you know, let's not go there for a moment, because obviously he probably would decline the invitation. But I think we do now need that political heavyweight who can kick down the doors, going back to your analogy, get the microwave going rather than the oven, really, really turbocharge all of this. And I would go for both a senior political spokesperson, government spokesperson now, who could lead it politically, and I would also resurrect the idea of the business champion, which somehow got lost in the wash as well about 6 months ago. And I would go for really, really empowering this now, because the market's there, the universities are there, it's all there to be had and to be done.
Okay, well, Lord Heseltine, if you're listening, do respond to Jackie's invitation. Alistair.
I just want to reflect on the journey that we've made, and then focus on the vision. What could the vision be? Because these leaders, whoever they are, there's been a huge amount of thinking, and we just haven't got the message across. But Nigel was talking before about the pillars and the local industrial strategies, and this is all really important foundation work. And we had four pillars, which were, and there were three originally, placemaking, connectivity, the productivity, and the environment. And actually, the environment should have come first, and it will. Now, we looked at those and thought, well, actually, we're interested in how they interrelate. What system can we propose? And as soon as you have a pillar and a working group around it, then that becomes, you know, people are looking for where you belong. And the universities were belonging in the productivity work stream. And we ignored that. And I'm really pleased that we did. And what's come out of the whole thing and hasn't yet kind of, you know, gone into the oven, but it's right there as a lovely bit of rosemary and garnish, is the vision is, it in the past you had a choice. In the 19th and 20th centuries, if you grew the economy, you wrecked the environment, you know, dark satanic mills. And vice versa, if you protected the environment, then there was very little economic activity. And with the R&D capability and the messages that are coming and the challenges from government and from the United Nations, we have an opportunity and a responsibility to bring those two things together and make sure that any development that we do is actually improving the environment. So if you've got this opportunity for growth, set out at the beginning, and there's a lot of discussion around the framework that should be in place to make sure that this is real. And there's huge activity being led by the LEPs in and other organisations, so clean tech at either end of the corridor, but bringing investment into new technologies. And in Scotland, they have a climate emergency research fund. We haven't got such a thing here, but actually the private sector, I think, is very interested in this, engaged in it. The way that there's been an amazing piece of work done, led by Jim Hall at Oxford, but involving six universities in the UK, looking at how what is the interrelationship, it's a system of systems approach, looking at how we can sustain, track, target long term. I don't think we've got the targets. We've had 1 million homes. People are afeard of that. It's used by politicians. We need a different vision, and we need someone to articulate that on our behalf.
Okay, thank you. Nigel, just listening to some of those comments there, you know, there is a sense that we need to push government to do something.
Yeah,
but there's absolutely. Also, Jackie referred to there not just being a top-down approach, but there needs to be a bottom-up approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what you were talking about with the LEPs and the local authorities.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the critical point here is you can kind of run away with headlines. So whatever the numbers are that have been talked about, the reality is there are communities, there are people who want to benefit from that wealth, from that opportunity that exists. And perhaps what we've not done enough of in the past, and we've certainly started to move towards that, as Alistair referred, the local industrial strategies, is to be really clear about where those economic assets are, because they're the anchors that will allow us to look at how that economy can grow. We can start to identify opportunities to pilot, to be an area where we encourage investment, to develop the new technologies, to test those technologies and to implement them in a way that then allows us to demonstrate the levelling up effect of, you know, new technology being developed through from intellectual property to a kind of pre-manufacturing stage, but potentially for other parts of the country to take that forward. So you could see very, very clearly a pattern where we would bring new products and services to market, we would collaborate with other parts of the UK, we could bring that investment in to test and to pilot in the geography that is the ARC. We've been very successful in many parts, particularly in Oxfordshire, around things like artificial intelligence, connected autonomous vehicles, space and satellite technology. They are globally significant investment opportunities in the way that Jackie referred to. There are plenty of investment opportunities into those. What we've got to do is really connect with the community so they can realise the benefit of them. And that takes away the pressure of housing as a conversation, because that becomes part of the infrastructure that supports a connected community. You know, whether that's, you know, improved broadband and telecoms and, you know, 5G. In many parts of that arc, you're struggling to get a telephone signal, let alone 3G, 4G or 5G. So let's look at investing in the infrastructure that supports the existing communities and can support the growth of those in a more sustainable way. You've got Milton Keynes looking at quite ambitious plans for growth. In each of the geographies, those local industrial strategies set out a direction of travel, opportunities for investment. That all needs underpinning and support. And the point about political weight behind that process is really critical. You know, we've seen in the past strong mayors in some of those locations who've been advocates, but actually it's the political environment in Westminster supporting that ambition and really understanding it that's important. So where we continue to work with university colleagues, with our local authorities, on developing a framework that doesn't deal just with, it's not about planning, it's not a super planning framework, it's a framework for place. It's looking at what's the quality of the environment, what's the ambition, where do we want to be? Because if we set a trajectory just simply around growing jobs, then we'll achieve that some way along the line, but we won't necessarily bring the communities with us, we won't necessarily take that investment out and beyond that first investment stage. We'll invest in things, but we won't create outcomes. So we might build some buildings, we might create some jobs in them, but we won't embed those within the communities, and we won't create opportunity for the next generation, which is what this is about. It's not about now, it's about 10, 15, 20, 30 years on. And creating an economic engine that can help the levelling. So the point about that levelling exercise is if you spend public money in that arc geography, we will turn that £1 into £3, £4, £5. that allows government through the Exchequer to be able to invest in other places that desperately need that investment. So it's not an either or, it's about investing in the places that can generate genuine wealth and then spread that wealth and opportunity to a much wider geography. And we're already collaborating as LEPs across the country on space and satellites. So Oxford and Cornwall, looking at Spaceport, the opportunity to launch satellites. You wouldn't launch them from Oxfordshire, but you can. If you launch them from Cornwall, we can collaborate. We can bring value to those both locations. So there's lots of opportunities.
And perhaps that's a point that's not made enough. And Mike, I'll put that to you. Nigel talking there about, you know, even if Cambridge-Oxford arc doesn't seem to suit the government's levelling up agenda at a headline level, by making it explicit that it can play a part in levelling up the rest of the country, that would sit more comfortably politically, I suspect.
It does, and you just need to look at some recent examples. It's probably not the best one because AstraZeneca moved from the north to the south, but the alternative was that potentially they would move out of the UK. So some of these tech companies, their choices, and we need to be frank here, are pretty limited in the UK. It's probably London, Oxford, Cambridge. And with all the best will in the world, and I'd love to say that in years to come, Manchester and Birmingham will be competitive. But at this moment in time, if Pfizer probably wanted to come to the UK, it'd be one of three locations. And would we have a strategy that said, no, we don't want one of the largest companies in the world settling in the UK? No, clearly we don't. So there are some clear and obvious wins for the UK in terms of that world leading research and what comes with a major drug company or tech company. What we don't do, and it's a challenge to Nigel, is the only example I can see of a tech company with the opposite of the Americans. So we have these great ideas. We have these wonderful ideas, and Alexa was based in a Cambridge-based company bought by Amazon. So Arm was the only company that grew to any substantial size in terms of a UK tech company, and then it was sold to SoftBank. What we don't do now, we have the brains, and if you look at Cambridge, Massachusetts, and what they've done, we have the brains, but we don't have the commercial acumen like the Americans do to convert those fantastic ideas. And if you talk about supply chains, and you mentioned it, and I agree strongly with that, you can have the ideas here, but where are the supply chains? Where is the manufacturing and the skilled manufacturing and the engineering jobs that go with that? They don't need to be based in the ARC. They can support the rest of the country. So really having the commercial acumen and the investment to keep it within the UK would be a huge win for UK PLC.
If I may, you're absolutely right in terms of that need to really grow those companies and anchor them within the economy. And there are some examples of very significant growth trajectories in terms of, you know, Adaptimmune, Immunicore, and lots of other companies who really become significant in their own right. That the trick will be to make sure that value that's generated in that area also then benefits other parts of the country. Now, whether that's tax receipt that's then effectively kind of hypothecated or moved to another part of the country. But I think my worry is if we don't get that infrastructure right, if we don't build the right infrastructure to support a growing economy and we don't start now, then we're not going to be able to help that rebalancing exercise over the nice kind of now 5, 10, 15 years or more. And having worked in both ends of the country as well, whether it's Cornwall and in the north, there are some challenges that are very similar. You know, we've got very significant and acute challenges in Oxfordshire around poverty, around the kind of life expectancy, a whole range of issues that I've dealt with in Cornwall or I've dealt with in Manchester and Leeds and various other parts of the country. So we've got to recognise we've got to keep the value that we've got there and grow it and make sure that helps. And I guess it's about striking a balance with investment and being able to demonstrate actually to government that if you spend a particular amount of investment in a particular location, that we can see a benefit in 2, 3, 4, 5 years elsewhere in the country. And the manufacturing one is probably the best example. You know, people like Siemens building their wind turbines out in the Humber Estuary because it's the right place to do it. Deep sea port access and they can move things out. The intellectual property that goes into that comes from different parts of the country. So I think there is an opportunity there to be pragmatic in terms of investment and be really clear about what we need. And strategic infrastructure is more than just road and rail. It is that broadband, it's telecoms, it's utilities, particularly water and power are going to be some challenges for us across that arc geography. and then capitalise on, as Jackie was talking about, the capitalise on the central area of the arc where we've got opportunities, where there are traditional industries there that we can translate into some of those opportunities, and just collaborate more. Let's just be more open about sharing investment and uplift.
Okay, I'll come back to some of your priorities on where you want to see that infrastructure investment in a moment, but we've not got long left. And Alistair, you wanted to come in there quickly, but also I'd like to ask you where productivity sits. We have a national productivity problem. Can the ARC be part of the solution to that?
Absolutely. And I was going to add to build on what Nigel had said, which is that the skills piece. If you've got 1 million new people, and that's an amazing opportunity, because our education model is quite difficult to change unless you come in from the outside and challenge it. So the new skills, digital, AI, cybersecurity, these are things which have just entered the vernacular over the last few years, and they're so actually bedding those down and turning those into courses and qualifications is something that the new universities are much more agile at doing, or perhaps they're more agile, but I think everyone's facing the same challenge. And the volume of new skills which will be needed in the centre of the arc is something that we need to encourage and nurture. So, and everyone's looking at this anyway. There's the MKU, the new university in the middle, and Milton Keynes. I think that's something it's had an aspiration for a very long time, and this is the moment. And just thinking about how already some of those collaborative partnerships have been encouraged by UKRI, so encouraged by the research bodies, for people to collaborate, and you have entrepreneurs and big companies and small companies and startups and unicorns. So thinking about the electrification of power in flight and how that's involved academics from Oxford, Oxford Brookes, Cranfield, Park Walk, the investor, two small startup companies, and the giants, the kind of Rolls-Royce behind it. So we're all coalescing around these problems, and I think we need to understand that, get behind it, and think about the skills that will be needed and where the growth can be. And then the homes, people will co-locate next to where they live, and it will be a wonderful experience.
Okay, we're almost out of time. I did want to ask each of you where you would like to see the Chancellor prioritise investment, maybe in 33 minutes' time or so. So we've only got a few moments. Jackie, we talk about infrastructure investment. Where would you like to see it go? What's going to supercharge the oven?
Well, I'm a big one for railways, but I have to say also we do need to realign the A1. But I could bore about that for hours. I think the big announcement today on the 5G piece, I think, will play in absolutely to this agenda. And I think, the fact that we've got, the triple crisis, if you like, of the post-Brexit situation, we're limping post-Brexit, we've got a global health crisis, we've got a climate emergency. I think the ARC could present a response to all three of those and be the economic engine that is needed in order to, as Mike Derbyshire says in such a wise way, deliver the levelling up of the North.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, Jackie, thank you. I'm going to be much more prosaic. We can't deliver any of this without people on the ground in local authorities, encouraged, resource, enthused and working with us. There is a recruitment crisis. None of these things get through the system at the moment. So there needs to be an investment within local authorities to have the skill sets to deal with this. So we think there's going to be some announcements potentially on development corporations. It's been announced for a number of years. Where are the skill sets within local authorities to set up these development corporations and talk to very experienced developers about this? So for me, it's about investment in human capital, investment in the local authorities, investment in people in the ARC. So it's all very well and good having a vision, but if there's no one picking up the phone or answering your calls, then it's pretty pointless.
Thank you. Nigel?
I guess if you take the two previous contributions, digital agenda is critical, so we need that. The skills point, whether that's skills in communities or actually in local authorities, that's a key one. Critically, the infrastructure of a place is what I think I'd like to see, and it's planning it as a place. So it's not just the road and it's not just the rail. It's making an investment into how we connect communities, and that could be digital in some locations. It could be physical in terms of road improvements, and it's improvements to existing infrastructure that will make a difference to communities. So I think that a connected infrastructure investment would be almost like a single pot, if you like, that allows us to prioritise critical investment to unlock the potential of existing places. There's already about 600,000 homes in plans across the ARC as it is. How can we improve the quality of those by connecting them better to the jobs and making sure that those communities get the best value? So it'd be an integrated investment infrastructure plan.
Thank you. Alistair, it's hard to pick anything that's not been said.
I would have all of the above. Mine would be really simple, and that's simply to have the courage to put that bird in the oven and to simply mention the ARC. Bring it in. It's the third sub-regional, organised, self-organised, massive machine for economic development for the benefit of the whole country. Just mention the ARC. Bring it into the parlance.
Okay, well, I admire your ability to sustain a metaphor greatly. The only thing I would take issue with is a nut roast can be very nice, but we haven't got time to go into that right now. Thank you all for listening. Thank you especially to our panel, and I'm sure this debate will continue, not least in 30 minutes' time.